Thank you very much. Good morning, everybody, and it's good to see once again, Baruch Hashem, our old faces, as well as new faces. I hope to have the opportunity to meet those whom I don't know yet. And obviously, to start off, Baruch Hashem will be a very productive and successful year for everybody across the board, for our faculty, for our Bayim, our general studies teachers, the administration, of course, the Talmidim. This week's Sedra in Parsha Shoftim, there is a directive that you're not supposed to put up a matseva. So what exactly is a matseva? In the common use of that term, a matseva refers to a tombstone. It's not what it's referring to in the pasuk. In the biblical Hebrew, the matseva there refers to some sort of a pillar which was used for service, used for worship. And it says we're not allowed to set up this matseva, such a pillar, to serve God. Asher sonei Hashem Elokecha, because the Kadosh Baruch Hu despises this. So a number of the commentaries are troubled that we find in the earlier part of the Chumash, and Chumash, this is in Parsha Shoftim, and this week said in Chumash Devarim, but in the time of our Avos, of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the Matzeva was used, this pillar was used as a means of serving God. So why is it that now the Torah tells us, Asher sonei Hashem Elokecha, this is something that Kadosh Baruch Hu despises? In the days of old, in the days of the ancestors of the Jewish people, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and their families, this was considered a proper and acceptable form of worship. So many different approaches. To share with you one thought, which I saw from Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Avraham. Rav Moshe Feinstein suggests that the word matseva itself means a pillar, means something which is stationary, something which is stand still. And a person's approach to service of God and to self-development, might add, is not supposed to be represented by something that stands still. And he suggests that in the days of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and their wives, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, in the time of our ancestors, before the giving of the Torah, there were no commandments per se. And whatever a person did was already above and beyond. Whatever relationship one developed with God was already voluntary, so to speak. It was already above and beyond. So you could look back and rest on your laurels and approach God and say, look what I've accomplished. I've reached this particular goal. Look what I've done. And that would work as a means of connecting with God because, wow, the person achieved the level. There was no expectation necessarily that the person would strive to go higher and to improve because there were no mitzvahs, there were no commandments to do so. However, after Matan Torah, once the Torah was given, so then a person has no right to rest on his laurels and look what I did so far. Because there are always more mitzvahs to accomplish, there are more commandments to fulfill, there are more responsibilities, there's a place to grow. And therefore, the matseva that represents being stationary, that was rejected ultimately. It was okay in the old days before the Torah was given, before commandments were presented. Then you could rest on your laurels and say, wow, look what I did. But after that, you can be proud of what you accomplished, but the goal has to be to develop further in the future, and that's why this particular mode of worship was eliminated. That's the suggestion Moshe Feinstein. What's relevant to us is that a person has to recognize in our world today, in the Torah world, and in the secular world as well, but we're yeshiva, in the Torah world, a person has no right to stand back and say, look, I've done everything I have to do. In simple language, a person, and it's certainly true of a high school boy, high school girls too, but we're talking about a yeshiva, so high school boys, we're all a work in progress. We're a work in progress. There's no one can set back, turn back and say, I've done everything that I can possibly do. I'm done. I've reached the pinnacle. We're a work in progress. And that's something to bear in mind, in my opinion, as we instruct our students in whatever the area is. There's a different verse, there's a pasuk, which refers to people as malchim. Nasati lecha malchim ben ha'omdim ha'ele. Angels, that we understand angels to be, are omdim. They stay stationary. They can't improve. They can't go further. The way they're created is to have a particular mission to fulfill, and that's it. They're stationary. But if people are malchim, mem hei lamed chaf, malchim, they progress. They go. They move in a direction. Our Jewish law is called halacha because it's a progression. We're going in a certain direction. And that's true of people in general. It's certainly true of developing young minds. We're speaking here about boys in Yeshiva High School. There are works in progress. And our task as teachers, regardless of our subject, regardless of the material that we're teaching, is to develop those minds and to assist those youngsters to become who they could possibly become. The word educate, the English word educate, you know, in terms of its origins, its etymology, means to draw out, to bring out that which is inside. Everybody's created with a certain potential. In fact, some point out that the Torah, when God speaks about making man, uses an unusual expression. It says, Na'aseh Adam, in the plural, Na'aseh. And this creates a lot of problems. What do you mean? There's only one God. So who was he talking to when he said, let us, okay, or we shall make man? Well, who's he talking to? Again, numerous approaches. The one is that he was talking, so to speak, to man himself. Let you and I create a person together. I'll give you certain potential, certain raw material. I'll give you talents. Everybody is born with certain talents and certain potential, certain raw material. What you do with that, that's up to you. And our goal as teachers and educators is to help our students maximize their particular potential. That's really what chinuch is all about. I pointed out many times, the Rashi says in the Chumash in Parshas Lech Lecha, explaining that word chinuch, which we hear all the time referring to education, as being taking something and making it suitable for the use that it's going to have for the rest of its existence. Whether we're talking about a person or talking about a vessel or an item. Lechanech means to make something suitable. Rashi and Chumash on the positive Arach, that's chanicha, if you want to look it up, Parshas Lech Lecha. In any event, it means it makes something suitable. So our task, when we have boys at the age of 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, when they come to us at these teen years, is to seek and look for the potential in each youngster and help that person become who he is capable of becoming. And so, we don't teach Gemara, and Chumash, and Halacha, and math, and science, and English, and history. We teach Yaakov, and Moshe, and David, and Tzvi, and Chaim, and Zev, and whatever the name happens to be. We're teaching people. We're not teaching subjects, we're teaching people. My particular area, okay, so I'm teaching Gemara. Your particular area, you're teaching history or science. But basically, you're teaching a person, and you're trying to develop that person's particular potential. And that's going to be the challenge that we all have, to make that appealing, to find what it is that's going to help this young man become a holistic person, the person that combines different aspects, because each one of us is so complicated. Each one of our minds is so, you know, is so multifaceted. We have to bring out in every student that which is his potential. One of the phrases which is used very often in connection with chinuch and Jewish education is the phrase chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Train the child, the youngster, the youth, al pi darko, in accordance with his derech, in accordance with his way. It applies to her as well, but again, we're talking about boys here. So, chanoch l'nar al pi darko. That's the famous part. The second half of the pasuk is less well known, but it's part of the pasuk. It says, gam ki yazkin lo yosu mimena. Because when he gets older, he won't veer or stray from that particular path. Educate the child in accordance with his way, his path, because when he gets older, he won't veer from that. And the usual interpretation is that if you train him along a certain path, then he'll stay on that path the rest of his life. That's true. But there's another interpretation. Chanoch l'nar al pi darko. Every person has his or her particular way of looking at things, particular moods, particular talents, particular abilities. And those are going to be the same things that he has when he gets older. In other words, touch the child, touch the youth in accordance with what speaks to him now, because that's what's going to be, that's what speaks to him later also. Those of you who have children, who have grandchildren, you sometimes see as adults the very same characteristics that they had. I know with my own children, you know, certain character traits when they were 2 and 3 years old, the same thing now that they're 30 and 35 years old. The same, you know, the same reaction to certain things, the same approach. That's the way people are. People have certain things, and if you think about it, you realize, I think it's true. Not that they don't mature in those, but certain, whether certain traits or certain ways of reacting to things and so on, you saw it already when they were very, very little. Gam ki yazkin l'yosu mimena, referring to the derech, not to what you train him, but to the derech, to the path. So you have to figure out, this particular young man, it took you one woman, but again, in the yeshiva, we're talking about boys, so this particular young man has certain talents, certain abilities, so now we have to key into that, and you have to look in every student and see what speaks to him, what's going to address him, and it's possible in every subject area. Not every student is going to be excited by every single thing that we teach. Clearly, in any subject matter. But hopefully, we can find something that excites the student in every particular area of education we're trying to do. You know, when I was a kid, and you know, when I was in elementary school in the late 60s and so on, so one of the bywords when they talked about Jewish education in general, one of these buzzwords was the double program. The double program. Anybody remember that? No, the double. It's not really used too commonly today. Okay, but it was a double program. Yeshiva, elementary schools, yeshiva high schools, and YU. It was a double program. It's probably a good phrase. It's not in vogue today. But a double program means that you had both Judaic studies, Limudei Kodesh, and you had general studies. It was a double program. Go to public school, it was a single program. And the yeshivas, the elementary schools, high schools, it's a double program. Okay, there's the Judaic studies and the general studies. But I once heard some have suggested, Rabbi Shalom Carmi, who's a philosophy professor at YU, once wrote an article many years ago, that actually should be called the triple program. Because the double program implies that they're two completely separate, unrelated domains. But you know, the human brain, you know about the anatomy of the human brain, so there are different sides of the brain that govern different parts of a person's ability to do whatever he has to do. Okay, and we can talk to our science staff to hear more about it. But basically, the human brain, that can be there's the side that controls the thoughts and the side that controls the action. The person has brain damage. The person has a stroke. Baruch Hashem, you know, some of you know that I had a stroke myself a few months ago, Baruch Hashem, but this did not, was not the type of stroke that I had. But sometimes the stroke can cause the type of brain damage where a person can think that he wants to move his right arm, and he'll move his left arm instead, because there's been something severed. The part of the brain that unites the left side and the right side is called the corpus callosum. And if that's damaged, God forbid, if that's damaged, a person can know what he's thinking, but not know how to do it. Even though physically he can do it, and physically can think about it, but there's a breakdown. I hope I'm describing it correctly from a scientific perspective, but that's my understanding of the corpus callosum. So the idea of a double program is really a triple program. Because it's supposed to unite, to contribute to an entire whole, to make a person be able to function in this world, guided by Torah values. If a person only has one and not the others, there is something missing. If he's going to go out into the world, yes, there are situations where a person can go live in a certain place where all he'll need is one or the other. Okay, but as a general rule, certainly with the in the society in which we live today, a person has to be able to be familiar with operating within society. Obviously, as someone guided by the Torah, informed by Torah values, which are the basics, but you also have to know how to develop yourself and how to interact and how to talk to people. And it's not just in the realm of studies, Torah studies, general studies. It's also in the realm of being a mensch, of being a person. Being a person. You have to know how to talk to somebody. You have to know how to speak to other people. We say this to the boys all the time. I say to the boys all the time. You know, do you say please? You know, do you say thank you when you get off the bus to the bus driver? Do you say please to the guy across the street who gives you a slice of pizza? Again, what kind of a person are you? I've mentioned in the past, a number of years ago, one of the senior rabbis from the college, NYU, came to me one morning and he said, "Rabbi Tavis, I have to tell you what happened this morning. I walked into the MTA building." And my immediate reaction was, uh-oh. I'm being honest. You know, like what, they knocked him over? What they do to me? You know. So he said, "I was coming in the doors, and the boys were just coming out of davening to go to breakfast." And I'm thinking, double O. All these hundreds of boys pouring out to go to Dunkin' Donuts, wherever they're going. And so he said, "I was coming in the doors in the front, and one boy held the door, first set of doors open, so I could come out, carrying a briefcase. And another boy held the next set of doors open. I have no idea who they were, but I just want to tell you, you know, that was a wonderful thing." And, you know, after breathing a sigh of relief, that he was fine, Baruch Hashem, I went around, I was interested in finding who it was, but I went around to every shir at that time, okay, in the morning, that morning, and I related that, and you know, I said, "I'm not looking to find out who it is," but that's what has to be. That's also part of being a whole person, not just knowing, you know, Talmud and Chumash and all the Torah subjects, and at the same time being conversant in history and science and so on. It's developing yourself as a person. And that's really what has to stick with a person his whole life. Everybody has talents. You know, the Talmud has a very difficult passage to understand. It speaks about, you know, what we might call today astrology. And I don't go into that now, whether there's anything to that, not anything to that, the discussion among the rabbinic authorities. But the Talmud suggests that if a person is born at a certain time, so they have a tendency to spill blood. Well, that's usually not understood to be a good thing for the person to be a murderer. The Talmud said, no, the person can become a doctor. A person can become a dentist. A person can become a moel, you know, to do circumcisions and so on. Right? I mean, it depends. Everybody has abilities. It depends what you do with them. So our challenge as educators is to figure out what is it they're going to do with the talents that you have. But the goal has to be, therefore, as teachers, and I know it's difficult, and I know we can't do it all the time with every student, but at least that's the goal, you know? The goal has to be to connect to every student, to find a way, how can I connect with this guy? How can I connect with that one? The student will be more receptive to what you're teaching in a classroom if he sees that you care about him outside the classroom. And I get it, we're all busy, but somehow that has to come through. It has to come through when you're a Rebbe, when you're a teacher, it has to come through that you care about the students. You're not just there presenting a curriculum. Oh, you got to have the regions, got to have an AP, got to have this, you have to have a beginner when you go into yeshiva and so you better know this. That's utilitarian, and I'm not taking away, we have to impart information. But that can't be what it is. The students have to see that we genuinely care about who they are and that we don't have negative views about them. You know, the Torah tells us that Moshe was not allowed to go into the land of Israel. Imagine disappointment. Chazal tell us, he davened so many times, 515 times, he was able to go into Eretz Yisrael, to go into the land of Israel, and he wasn't allowed to. And it's not even 100% clear what his sin was. Something to do with hitting the rock and instead of speaking to the rock. We know the story generally, but there are numerous interpretations exactly what the Avera, exactly what the transgression was. But some suggest that his transgression was that he got angry. And he said, listen here, you rebels. He called the people rebels. Listen here, you rebels. Shimon HaMorim, listen here, you rebels. Now the truth of the matter is, they were rebels. he was right. I mean, he was talking to them. He said it like it is. They were complaining about water and this and that. He said it right. You know what the problem was? Once he had labeled them, then he could no longer be an effective leader. That's the idea. Okay, once he labeled them, then that was going to be his perspective on them, and that would take away from his being able to be an effective leader. Very careful about labeling. I mean, I know, again, teachers talk to each other, and we imagine, you know, you're teaching in 10th grade, whatever, and you see the guy who had this boy last year in 9th grade. Oh, you have so-and-so? Good luck. Right? Okay. Well, you know, that kid comes into the class with two strikes on him. Didn't do anything yet. It could be that he decided over the summer, he matured, he turned it around, but now by saying that, by telling the teacher, oh, you have him, huh? I had him last year, you're in for a run for your money. We do that sometimes. You need to stay away from that. Not to label students. Okay, we have to treat each student, you know, in such a way that the student understands and we understand that we care for them. And I think it's such an important lesson. That's what develops a whole person. If all we care about is transmitting the information, I'm not denigrating or minimizing the importance of presenting information. That's what we are. We're teaching. But it has to be to connect. And there's a way to connect with every student. And all of us together can connect. Maybe I can't connect to this student, but the other teacher can connect to that student. We work together as we have the system, you know, grade deans and grade meetings and so on. Maybe one teacher is more effective with this kid, the other teacher more effective with that kid. That's okay too. But somebody has to be able to connect. The student has to have a role model. The importance of a role model is also presented in the Chumash much earlier on. The Torah tells the story that Joseph was in Egypt, and he was tempted by the wife of Potiphar, okay, who tried to seduce him when nobody was home. And the Torah says that, implies that Yosef seemed just about ready to give in. That's how Chazal understand. He was ready to give in to that temptation and to sleep with the wife of his master, with Ashes Potiphar. And what happened? The Medrash tells us he saw Mizjukno Shal Aviv. He saw the image of his father's face. One Medrash says the image of the mother's face. It was both. Okay, and I always wondered what was the father mother doing, going like this, something like that, you know, what exactly was the face. But the point is that there was a role model. There was someone who he was able to conjure up in his mind's eye that enabled him to withstand this temptation. Our students have to have the job of the parents also, but it's also the job of teachers. If I looked up to this teacher, I don't want to disappoint that teacher. I don't want to disappoint that Rebbe. So I'll behave in a certain way because it makes the Rebbe proud of me. It makes the teacher proud of me. This is true in general studies as well. Not just I'm speaking not just to the Rebbe. The teacher, the student will see, oh, this person is a person of intelligence, a person of accomplishment, and I want to impress that person. I want to behave a certain way because that's what he or she expects of me. The people have to have that kind of role model. That's what develops whole personality. And that goes, in my opinion, beyond getting, you know, a 5 on the AP or a 95 on this exam and so on. It's what kind of person you become ultimately. That has to be part of our mission as well. And one of the ways, I think I'm running out of time, right? So one of the ways that I think we do this is by, especially in today's world, is by presenting positivity. By being positive. At one time, there was a different approach to education and so on. But today, you have to be positive. And it doesn't mean you have to be, you know, let kids get away with stuff and be lenient about everything. That each teacher has his or her own style. But you have to be positive about your subject and positive about yourself. If students see the teacher who always seems to be grumpy and grouchy and complaining about this and complaining about that, it's almost impossible to connect to that person. Okay, when I was the principal here years ago, some of the people who worked there at the time, not too many left, but some of the people who worked at that time, would know that I would tell them, you want to come into my office, you can tell me anything you want. You can tell me I don't know what I'm doing and the school's crazy and this is falling apart and that's no good. Fine. In the confines of my office. But outside the office, in front of the students, you got to be positive and upbeat and this is great and this is wonderful. Because that's what the students have to see. I've said this in my shul. I happen to be a rabbi of a shul. I said this in my shul. The children have to see a religious home, a home of Torah and mitzvah. It has to be the happiest home. It has to be people to see, oh, that brings you happiness. I see this teacher loves science, history, math, English so much. Wow, it makes the person so happy. Such a positive, such an upbeat person. I think I've told over in the past, I heard once from Rosh Weiss, Shlita was a prominent rabbinic authority in Israel. He said he remembers when he was a bach, when he was a student in the yeshiva. He didn't say which yeshiva was, or who the person speaking was. He said that a certain rabbi got up, he remembers in the Beis Medrash, and was screaming about the importance of simcha, being happy in life, and simchas haTorah and chavrus of the Shmaitzer, happiness and learning and happiness and life, and screaming all about happiness. And he said he remembers thinking, he was 16 or 17 at the time, so he remembers thinking after that lecture that if this man knows so much about happiness, how come we never see him smile? That was the youngster's impression, right? Okay, we got to smile. Doesn't mean everything's perfect all the time. Doesn't mean we don't get angry at students, we don't discipline. I'm not saying that at all. But overall, our students have to look at us as the role models, as people who are cheerful, we're happy with life. Okay, whatever's going on, we all have challenges. We all have difficulties, understood. But that's part of our job as teachers, as rebbeim, to project a sense of happiness and a joy of life, right? And a joy of being who we are. That I love teaching this material. I love teaching you guys. I love being here. It's a wonderful school. Okay, you know, behind closed doors, we can talk about what needs to be fixed and what the problems are, sure. But in front of the students, this is wonderful. Because that creates happiness and that is contagious. And if the rebbeim and the teachers and so on exude this sense of simcha, this sense of the joy of life and so on, then the students will connect with that person. Who wants to connect to a person who's grouchy and grumpy all the time? It's draining. People who are rabbis of shuls know sometimes they're people, you know. they drain you, right? I mean, it's the way it is. Whereas other people are always upbeat. Right? All of us would rather connect to somebody who's upbeat and positive and cheerful. Again, that doesn't mean you don't deal with problems. I'm not saying to sweep things under the carpet. But be positive. Let the students see you're happy with what you're doing. You're happy as a teacher. You're happy as an educator. You're happy as a Rebbe. You're happy to be with them. You're happy to come here. Even when you're not, there are days we all have down days, understood. When you come here, you want to develop that person. That's how you connect the students. One of the ways to connect the students. So these are just some, I hope, economists we speak about, just what we have to set up as goals for ourselves. To be the types of Rebbeim and the types of teachers that will impact students, that will be able to figure out what this particular student can develop. He has potential in this particular area, he has potential in that particular area, we can draw that out. To be people who represent a role models to our students of who we are and how we behave and how we conduct ourselves, and to be people who are cheerful and happy with what we're doing, so that our students will want to connect to us and want to gravitate towards us, and they'll want to impress us, and then they'll be successful in our classes and our shiurim, and in general as successful people, ultimately becoming whole people. People who have skills in the Lubavitch Kodesh, skills in general studies, and that triple program, bringing it together as one whole, in a way that we'll be proud of for many years to come. That's our hope. I thank you for listening. And Mirtz Hashem, we set that as a goal. We'll be successful in achieving it as successful as we possibly can. Thank you for listening. Have a good morning.